Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast, where AI meets leadership. And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we delve deep into the world of Chief AI Officers, exploring their journeys, insights, and the challenges faced in steering AI initiatives within their organizations. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have a special guest who has been at the forefront of AI and data science in various industries. Joining us is Anju Gupta, the Vice President of AI at Northwestern Mutual. Anju has a remarkable background, having previously served as the Chief Data and Analytics Officer at Enterprise Holdings, and she held key roles at Monsanto and Syngenta. At Northwestern Mutual, she's responsible for enabling and driving business activation of AI/ML across the organization. We are thrilled to have her here to share her insights and experiences. Welcome to the podcast, Anju.
Thank you, Sanjay.
Wonderful. Anju, to our global audience, why don't we start from the beginning? Can you tell our audience about your journey and how you got to and what inspired you to build a career in AI, in artificial intelligence?
No, absolutely. So thank you. Very much looking forward to our podcast today and engaging in a rich conversation with you. When I think about how I got into AI, I always feel like AI came to me than me going into AI, because I was, when I was in high school and growing up, I loved math. And then from there, I started genetics, and math was a good combination. So I really enjoyed working in genetics. So I have my degree in genetics and minor in statistics. And from there, started to write tons of algorithms when I was at Monsanto, patents as well. So enjoyed doing that. Never realized that was AI other than trying to do good data science, right? Develop products that uses good data science technology and being able to predict what that final product outcome will be that can accelerate the growth of the company. So from there, you know, it was around 2012 when my CIO came to me and he's like, Anju, can you build an AI strategy? And I was like, wow, that makes sense, because now we are actually living in AI world. And this was 2012, Jeff Hinton's era of, image classification, deep learning, becoming front and center. So from there, AI really became part of how I started to grow myself and the companies that I was working for as well, and started to build the teams that led the AI for the company. And now at Northwestern Mutual, you know, it's been phenomenal working in a place where there's such a demand for driving acceleration through good science, through good intellect, through, enabling our advisors with some of the work that we are doing. So that's why I feel like, it's not that AI came to me. I just grew into the space. And it's not just me, the folks who are in the professional industry doing data science for a number of years, they'll probably say the same thing, is AI became them as well with time.
Oh, fantastic. So you didn't go to AI, AI came to you. That's incredible. So Anju, we have a global audience. So for especially people who are outside the US listening in, two things. Can you tell them a little bit about Northwestern Mutual? What does it do? And secondly, your role and responsibilities at Northwestern Mutual. We talked about your title, but just a little bit below the title, what does that actually mean?
So when you think about Northwestern Mutual, it is a 167-year-old mutual company, right? But when you walk down the halls, the building essentially represents the most modern one of the buildings that you would see in Milwaukee or in New York that you go. When I think about our intent is essentially to free Americans from financial anxiety. What I mean by that is we are a company that sells insurance product to rest of the Americans. We are not a publicly traded company. Our nearly 5 million policy owners are our shareholders. Every dollar of profit we generate is for their benefit, to ultimately make them more financially secure. So when you think about FRs, they are literally hand-holding with our clients helping them understand what our products can mean for them and can mean for their financial security. Being a purpose-driven company guides our business strategy. It has always created differentiation, and in our case, it fuels the long-term growth and relevance for all of us. A big part of our go-to-market strategy, which I don't know a lot of people know this or not, but it hinges on a comprehensive financial plan that offers a combination of both the insurance, investment, and the third lever as well, which is the annuity. Not a whole lot of companies do that, bring all these three components together so that you know what the balance you need to maintain as a client. And we know what we know in reality, because we have been in this business, that they can work together really well to drive higher income and better outcomes for our clients. So with that backdrop, my work at NM, at Northwestern Mutual, we favorably call it NM, is to lead the AI division for the company. And what it means is understanding, you know, where all we can apply, you know, great algorithms that can drive prediction for either reducing the cycle time, increasing the operational efficiency of what we do, or increasing the revenue. And not just for us, but also ensuring that it is identifying the clients by which we can imagine the future for them as well.
No, so that's quite a handful. So NM provides financial security for a lot of Americans and wants to provide it for even more. And you obviously are handling AI for them. A couple of questions. How big is NM? This is again for our audience who don't know this, number one. And number two, can you talk about a few, you kind of alluded to that, few tangible applications of AI within NM, whether it's in customer service, whether it's internal, etc. And this is for your peers, by the way, who want to know what you are doing so they can learn from you.
Yeah. So when I think about Northwestern Mutual, we have advisors, set of advisors that are all distributed across the country. Mm-hmm. So we have roughly a little over 9,000 plus advisors that sell our products. And that's our, you know, that's our bread and butter on how they sell and what they sell to our clients. Mm-hmm. And then when I think about the places where we are interjecting AI, so straight through processing, right? There's a way we underwrite claim, we underwrite policy for a client. And it requires a lot of human touch in underwriting a client to make sure we are classifying them into the right risk stratification level. So we use machine learning models to drive straight through processing within underwriting so that we are reducing the cycle time. Even within claims, we are using AI models to cut down the cycle time, which is again increasing the operational efficiency for the clients. There's some fraud detection work that we do where, again, we work very closely with our compliance team and drive and understand if there's fraud happening. So we elevate it. So I always call it, it's an augmentation of human intelligence with a human. So all of our deployment patterns has human in the loop. And then there's, forecasting at multiple places, be it in servicing or be it in marketing. So we are using AI models in forecasting as well. Then propensity scores, right, which is a basic engine for AI models. So we are using AI within that space as well. And we were all doing completely fine by working with the business, identifying the opportunities, reimagining the business processes. But then 2 years ago came generative AI, right, which none of us, and again, we have been a lot of us who are AI leaders within the world, they're all very well aware with the AI. And when I say AI, the classical AI, which is your mathematical models, right? And we had in our portfolio, we always had those language models, natural language processing models, but never had the win with those natural language processing models, right? And then came generative AI, which really changed the game for how language models started to perform. So now I am definitely adding a lot in the portfolio of generative AI, which is which is easier to sell because people can understand, can feel it, can touch it. So I always say that AI in the past, before the OpenAI and the GPT phenomena came in, it was always a boardroom conversation where it was limited to a small group of people, a center of excellence. But with generative AI coming in, it is a dinner table conversation, right? No matter where you go, it is at your Thanksgiving table. Even if you're not an AI, people are talking about AI. So it has really created a lot of demand for all the AI leaders and also forced us to learn even more about how these models are getting trained, how these models are performing. How do you think about responsible AI? Because if we are not be cautious about this, I think it's incumbent on us to be really true to ourselves to ensure that we are thinking about AI deployments as ethical and responsible AI deployment, no matter how you do it. So demand, there's a significant demand for AI because it cuts across every business function now. I think Satya Nadella said it very well a couple of years ago. When I say couple, it's less than 2 years ago, right? It will be part of every product that every company releases. How true it'll be, only next 6 months to an year, we'll know. But I do believe that that will be fundamental.
No, that's great to hear. So again, several questions to follow up. Anju, you talked about fraud detection. You talked about internal processes. I didn't hear anything on the customer service side because that's considered the low-hanging fruit, especially for LLMs. Is that something that NM is doing?
Yeah. So on the customer service side, the client experience side, we are definitely doing, you know, forecasting as well, forecasting models, but using GPTs we have run in production, using GPTs to easily access for our call center reps. How can you, because it's a challenge, right? How can you easily access your internal knowledge to be able to answer clients' questions faster? And that has been a challenge for every company. Google has spoiled us by having this real-time answer to any question that we want. But not any company has same page rank search engine algorithm that Google has. But now with LLMs, everybody has that, right? So we are building GPT agents where you can search and we have uploaded all of our internal knowledge content into you know, the semantic search, into our ingestion pipeline. And then our CSRs are able to search much more quicker and faster versus digging and digging and digging to find the right answer.
So just to clarify, you're using large language models to support your CSRs. These are not chatbots that are directly interfacing with your agents or customers, right?
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about this as well, because this is also not very defined for an enterprise. Mm-hmm. Every enterprise is doing based on learnings that they are having, they're seeing external to their own industry. And as I said, I had to learn a lot for myself. I'm very fortunate to have a really strong team at NM. And one thing I'll say at NM, it's much easier to hire good talent because of the trusted brand that Northwestern Mutual has. So again, we have roles as well. If they're interested in people, they should definitely learn more about Northwestern Mutual, what we are doing here within that space. But when you think about the large language models as well, people have options, right? You can use, there's one large language model coming every alternate day, I feel like. Right, there's open source, there's closed source. So as leaders are thinking about CIOs, especially as they're thinking about models, the large language models, they really need to think about, you know, what is their enterprise principles to be adopting these large language models? That's the first thing that we had to do. We had to define our generative AI principles before we moved forward with any large language model, right? And you can go with open source, you can go with closed source as well, but how do you ensure that you have privacy of your clients well taken care of, You have security of those models, so well taken care of. And you don't want to be in the front line of the news to begin with. And this is a place, if you don't manage it carefully, you'll be in the news for the wrong reasons. So a couple things. One is it starts out, there's multiple things to deploy a generative AI model, right? You have to start out with understanding how do you ingest your unstructured assets, which we never had to look for. Those unstructured assets, and most of the companies have more than 80% of their data assets in unstructured, which we were never able to touch and do anything about it. Generative AI suddenly made it easier for us to consume and do something with it. So first of all, you know, definitely have a strategy on how you are thinking about your unstructured asset and how are you bringing it in to be able to use it. That will include your strong governance on your unstructured asset. That will include ensuring that you have metadata management on top of it, labeling and annotation on top of it. So once you take care of that, then the second step is your semantic search, right? There's multiple options within the industry to talk about the semantic search. You can pick the best that you want, but also think about what is your ecosystem when it comes to semantic search, and within that ecosystem, which one fits the best for what you are wanting to do. So enterprise alignment is key to that semantic search as well. And then comes the LLM. LLM is your last mile, right? Because semantic search is essentially your key to unlocking the semantic layer of what you're wanting to get the output of. And then there's vector databases in between as well. Any enterprise leader can question whether they need the vector database or not, so that you have to really make sure you understand whether you need the vector databases or not. And again, I don't want to get too technical, but it all balances out with the token length as well. And then the last mile is your large language model. OpenAI can give you one. You can have GPT-4, GPT-4o, 3.5 or 4o. There's, and then Anthropic, Claude, different versions of Claude. Then there's open source DBRX, Google has. So that's a crowded place. And I also feel like there's an LLM war that is going on, right? Because you can get 4o with OpenAI, but you can get Claude with OpenAI. You can get Claude only with Amazon. So again, that's a place where you need to make sure that there's a team focused on benchmarking as well, so that you know which one is coming up best. This LLM world will change and evolve quite a bit. Right now, everything is a large language model. It's 170, 180 billion in trillions parameter models, right? Which takes a lot to build. But the world, I do feel like, will evolve towards small large language models, which will be more catered towards your own use case. Right now, we are all catering to generalized use case, such as customer experience. That's an easy one because it only depends on semantic search. Doesn't depend a whole lot on your LLM per se, right? Because LLM is that, I feel like at this point, LLM is more for packaging. And then semantic search is what drives the outcome. So, you know, if these are the four verticals that you need to think about, then you have to pay attention to each one of those.
Well, I think you've done a fantastic job for our listeners who either are your peers or starting out, et cetera. Some follow-on questions, Anju, to some of the points that you raised, some very important points. The first one is, are you using vector databases at NM?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, great. And you find that pretty helpful from the perspective, again, this is for your peers, because right now, a lot of people are looking at vector databases too.
Yeah, and the vector database space is evolving. You can name, there's plenty of...
Just like LLMs.
Yeah, there's plenty. Some that are mature and some that are maturing. And then the strategic vendors, so all the big threes, they have their own vector databases as well.
Right.
And vector databases make a difference. It comes down to how you're driving your chunking strategy, right? So again, it's test and learn, right? Test and learn as much as you can to understand whether you need, depending on the use case, whether you need a vector database or not. And if you do, then think about within your enterprise, what are the use cases that are going to use vector database? If you have a lot of use cases where you are going to use vector databases, then elevate it to the enterprise level, work with your infrastructure teams. I also feel like, you know, it is the AI and the generative AI, it is a collaborative, it is a team sport, right? You got to bring your cloud teams together. You got to bring your product teams together. You got to bring your business teams together and then learn together on how these things will deploy. Because some of the work, the one that we have in production right now, we didn't do it alone by any means, right? We started the notion of what it will be, but then we need a cloud team to enable a lot of components. And I'm very fortunate to have a very strong infrastructure team that is willing to run with us. I talk to my industry peers, they're not getting the same freedom to be able to operate. Then I have a really strong product team as well that are bringing all the pieces together for us. And then a business team, they are wanting to run with us. But above and beyond, you need a really strong model governance team and your risk team to be able to give you that freedom to work with you to ensure that all the components you are driving is for responsible and ethical implementation. Because a lot of what's needed for these LLMs to be responsible and ethical, there's no rules out there, nothing is written. So how do you develop your own GenAI principles? How do you develop your own ethics principle? How do you drive training? It's a very strong component of what we are doing. So we work very closely with our human resources partners. They are driving the training for all of NM employees. We recently did a GenAI 101 for a large set of employees, right? So again, it's a team sport, and the quicker as a leader you realize, the better success you'll have for your company, right?
Yeah. So it's a team sport. It's a multidisciplinary collaboration. I think that's what, Anju, you're saying. To follow up on a point that you made a few times, you talked about governance. You talked about ethics. So let's go a little bit deeper into it. Does NM have an ethics, AI ethics committee? Like a lot of large Fortune 500 companies that I talk to, they have that. What kind of framework do you work with from an AI ethics or responsible AI standpoint? And then I want to follow up with talking about biases and other things related to that. So please tell that to your peers here.
Yeah. No, we have a lot of committees, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I'll just walk you through on how we are managing it. I feel like that's the right model, right structure, but if it doesn't work for somebody else, they can, it's always you modify based on what you learn from others.
Sure.
So when we started to work on generative AI, we quickly formed what I call an AI council, right? That's the council that is put together. It's a set of, you know, our senior leaders, our exec leaders within the company that are there to approve the use cases, whether this use case we should be using GenAI or not. Because we are sitting on, the demand is high. We are sitting on, you know, 100 plus backlog of GenAI use cases, and we can't do everything. So the AI council is formed to essentially, you know, pressure test. Is this the right use case that we want to invest our dollars and money in and invest our resources in? Because everything needs resourcing. And once that use case gets approved, then there's multiple phases that we go through. It needs to be passed through an enterprise architecture review, cybersecurity, privacy levers and all that. And post that, we have what we call, so then you do the testing and learning within a contained environment. And then what we call, instead of what AI ethics, we have a AI model risk oversight committee. And that's the committee which is comprises of a set of risk leaders from our risk team. I'm part of that as well. But leaders across the company that are managing the risk portfolio of the company, they're the ones who are looking at every GenAI use case that has to go, that is recommended to go into production. This team is a gate check for each one of those use cases to ensure that we are meeting the requirements that we have put in place for AI to be ethical and responsible. And that applies for both our classical AI, which is the mathematical models, and our generative AI, which is the language model. And then from there, it does go to the Enterprise Risk Exec Committee. And that's our final, stop. So anything that goes into production, EREC has a, I call it EREC, they have a view on it as well. So we have several gate checks. The intent is different, but at the end of the day, we want to make sure we are doing the right thing for our clients and how we are deploying these things as well.
So Anju, what you're saying is there are multiple checks happening over this whole workflow process that goes from an idea to the time of an execution. And you think that is a very helpful process to make sure there are no, let's just say, ethical issues or it's God responsible AI. Does that cover biases and things of that nature also? How are you, you talked about the value of data, and obviously the big concern right now for one of the big concerns is not all of them is inherent biases that are built into some of these LLMs. You are an insurance financial security firm, and that's considered an area ripe for biases because of the inherent nature of some of these systems. How are you looking to prevent that?
Yeah, no, this is a great question. And, I think very seriously about it. And the reason I tell you this is because my part-time job is I always try to break, and maybe it's my mind, I always try my best to see if I can break the algorithm or not, right? So I'm asking questions to give me wrong responses. And that's my part-time on the chat. I have the GPT-4o on my phone. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see if it gives me responses, biased responses or not. And it does, right? Mm-hmm. The 3.5 was I was getting a lot of biased responses. 4 and 4o, not so much, right? But it mm-hmm. is inherent, all depends on what questions you ask. So you know that. But when mm-hmm. you think about the use cases that we are applying, right? Mm-hmm. So where does bias come from? Algorithm is not inherently biased. It's the data that feed into the algorithm mm-hmm. that is biased, mm-hmm. right? So you have to make sure your data that you're feeding in does not have those assets that leads to a bias information in the outcome. Mm-hmm. Right? So that I always say that that is a critical component. So make sure you're looking at your data and ensure that, if you have to test out for bias, there are ways you can test it out for biases as well, right? Mm. So the use cases, call center use case that we have, we feed in our internal knowledge. There's no race, gender, nothing of that sort into our internal knowledge data. It's about our product, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm purchasing a permanent life insurance, tell me more about permanent life insurance, right? So it's a fairly, neutral asset. Mm-hmm. Not to say that bias won't come, right? So we have built in, and I won't be able to go deep into it, but we have built in privacy, the PII guardrails, and mm-hmm. we have certain guardrails before the data gets into the model so that we take care of beforehand. And those guardrails, and again, if whoever is listening to this podcast, if you're concerned about your bias and wanting to make sure you're doing the right thing, build those guardrails in sync with your model governance team, in sync with your cybersecurity and privacy team, because they can help guide on building those guardrails so that it sits at the point of deployment of every question that a user is asking. We have those guardrails built in that it cuts through before my LLM gives a response. So that's one way you can navigate it. But I fundamentally believe that you should do that. That's just the right thing to do.
So what Anju is saying is build the guardrails early on, collaborate with your cyber team, collaborate with your other teams early on to make sure this the data is not there. Because Anju, as you kind of said, right now you don't have any use cases that have this, but you also have over 122 use cases, and there'll be hundreds more that could open it up for some of these things, but you have taken some great preparation. Anju, want to shift a little bit to a topic which is kind of raging pretty hot. There's a Sequoia report that just came out, and there's a Goldman report that just came out, and I'm sure you are aware of that. The big question right now, and I ask this to all the chief AI officers, is the ROI. Because, again, hyperscalers are spending billions. Now the number is going to be close to $1 trillion. So let's take that away. They have their reasons for doing it, and that's a separate podcast. But for you, when you have to take budget approval and stuff like that, and I will tell you what some of your peers have told me, but I won't tell you upfront. How do you measure the return on investment or the value of some of these things? Is it tangible? Is it intangible?
No, and I think that's a muscle that AI leaders have to build, is to ensure that they're, no matter whether it's a classical AI product or generative AI product, value creation is fundamental. Mm-hmm. Right. And for classical AI, it's, you know, if you look at my portfolio, my entire portfolio, for every model that we deploy, we have a value proposition that we calculate upfront. And then when the value is realized, then we have a sign off from the from the business as well to make sure that they agree with that value realization. Right. So value creation in classical AI, I think industry has matured. We can calculate it. It's still not there, but yeah, we can do that. Generative AI, value creation is tough, right? But value creation is tough because it comes with a change management of the end user, mm-hmm. right? As we are deploying it, we are also seeing that not everybody adopts right away. It's, we have to change our own behavior as well. So the focus, and I have Microsoft 365 Copilot. I like the way I write my email. I am not using Microsoft 365 Copilot all the time. I'm using it when there's some, sensitive or not sensitive from the documentation perspective, but, you know, when it's emotionally a little bit challenging for me to write, then I use help with the 365 Copilot, especially if you're addressing a large group, then I use Copilot. But it's change behavior that will constantly come in the way of generative AI deployments. So how are you focusing on the change management and creating opportunities, learning opportunities for the folks who are at the end user? Prompt training is a big, big one. The more prompt training you provide, the more people are able to realize the value of these GPT agents, and the more they're able to use it, and the more you are able to get value out of it, right? Because if you do a controlled experiment, yes, you are seeing that it is adding a lot of value, but how do you bring that together with a large portion of people? And that time will tell, right? But again, having done AI deployments for many, many years, change behavior takes time. So don't rush yourself into trying to see. If you're impatient like me, then you want the answer to come in like 1 to 2, 3 months of deployment, right? But it's going to take time, right? So focus on driving the change management, the training, prompt training for your folks. And I do not have any doubt that you will realize the value. These things are really, really good in certain aspects of the things that you are wanting to do, which is search and retrieval, summarization, content creation, right? But it all depends on how you're wanting to use it. We are using it for summarization. We are using it for content creation. And we are seeing a lot of value. Is accuracy 100%? Of course not. It takes time to drive that accuracy to get to a higher level than what you would start out with. One thing I'll also add is the thing that I've heard industry from my external industry partners is the content ops team. So every time when you are deploying a GPT agent, then your users are responding. And we also have thumbs up and thumbs down for the users to say whether the answer was right or wrong. And then you take that data, because now users are telling me, is the content that you have, there are a few things that are wrong in the content. Every time I get a thumbs down on a consistent basis for the same question, then I know my content, there's something in my content that is inaccurate. So then that's when the content ops team comes in and fixes the content. So that's how we are addressing the data quality issue. So not addressing data quality upfront for LLMs only, right? You're addressing the data quality for LLMs once your users start to respond, and then the feedback loop on the content ops. So again, establishing a content ops team that is focused on the inaccuracies of the content and fixing it will drive your quality much higher as well, which in turn will drive the accuracy, which in turn drive the adoption. So I said a lot.
But three key points that I got out of it, Anju. One is that the return and the value will come for sure. Second is prompt engineering for your team across the board is very, very important. And a strong content ops team is also very important for that loop. Is that a good, accurate summarization, Anju?
Absolutely. And okay. One thing I would also add to that is prompt. When we think about prompt engineering, we think about it as an engineering skill, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in a business like mine, where we are doing search and retrieval on our internal content, prompt mm-hmm. engineering is a business skill set.
Right.
So we're asking business users to do prompting and we are training them. So they are essentially becoming prompt engineers. So it's not my team that are the prompt engineers. It's the business users that are my prompt engineers to help drive the outcome.
So you're talking about making sure the business users are well trained on the prompt engineering skills so they can get the most value out of it. Anju, one point you made is that the value will come. That's making a supposition, and I'm asking you from an NM perspective and broader, that means your C-suite has to have faith in you, has to have the patience. And this AI aspect, whether it's this LLM or this mathematical model, needs to have the blessings or the support, whether it's at the board level or at the C-suite level. Is that the case at NM, and is that what you would recommend for your peers?
Yeah, no, that I would say is for something as big as this, you definitely need C-suite support. You cannot, bottoms up can only go so far on this because you need investment, right? Mm-hmm. So again, at Northwestern Mutual, yes, we have support, tremendous support of our C-suite to want and a need to be wanting to understand what it is and how do we, you know, test and learn. So that's the muscle that our exec team has, is how do we test and learn and understand what value it can bring to the company? Do we know that it's going to work? Do we know that it's all rosy and starry and it will give us, you know, the value proposition? Probably not. But what we know is it is big. It has a transformational capability. So how do we go about testing and putting dollars aside to really providing us the freedom to be able to test and see whether it adds more value to our policyholders or not?
Awesome. Anju, you mentioned using the Eisenhower decision matrix for AI enablement at Northwestern Mutual. How does this framework help in assessing AI use cases?
Yeah, no, I mentioned the Eisenhower decision matrix. So let me tell you a little bit about what that is. Mm-hmm. And it's a, if you Google search it, you'll find it. But it's a simple four quadrant matrix where, you know, your x-axis is high to low impact, and your y-axis is high to low impact, and your x-axis is low to high complexity. So what we do is we do workshop with our business leaders. So business leaders bring in their leaders, I bring in my leaders. And it's just a brainstorming session that we do it for half a day or a day, depending on how much time the team can, both the teams can make. And the exercise is more about asking the questions that the business is trying to solve for. And it could be many questions, right? So what are the key OKRs that they're trying to go for? What are they trying to solve for? And then we look at that matrix and we start to place those questions on where they belong within the matrix. So if it's high impact and high complexity question they're asking, it goes up into the right-hand most corner. If it's low impact and low complexity, it goes down into the left-hand matrix. But then you have low impact and high complexity problem, and you have high impact and low complexity problem. So the way we get our work and we define what we're going to work on is if it's high impact and high complexity problem, then it's challenging for a non-AI person to be able to solve it. So you work in a pod structure with your business team and your AI team to solve for that high impact, high complexity. If it's high impact, if it's high complexity, low impact, then you really should be asking, do we need to work on this, right? Yeah. If it's low impact, low complexity, somebody's rest of the organization is solving for it, definitely. If it's high impact and low complexity, then business should be able to solve for themselves. If they are not, then what are the trainings we need to provide them to be able to solve for themselves as well? So I see that as a very simplistic framework to be able to bring our business leaders and AI teams together in both, us learning from them, them learning from us, and coming to a place where we are identifying what are the key areas where a collective team needs to focus on. And at the end of the day, I think most of what we do is we do the translation, right? Where there's a different language that we speak, there's a different language that business speak. So how do we come together and translate for each other to be able to solve for high complexity and high impact problems?
So I think the message, Anju, you're giving to your peers is focus on the high impact, high complexity problems, and that's where you'll generate the most value. That's very, very helpful. Anju, when you were at Monsanto, you built a startup ecosystem there.
Yes.
At Northwestern Mutual, have you done any collaborations, whether it's with academic institutions, startups, research institutions, because this is such a fast evolving area?
Yeah. No, I think so. And Northwestern Mutual has a very strong, partnership levers, right? So I'll start out with, we have a fairly, robust venture capital team that scopes out startups. We invest in startups as well. Then we have accelerator programs for startups as well that we invest in. So that's taking care of how we work with the startups. Then there's test and learn concept. We have an innovation team as well that test and learn with various startups. So that's, again, working with the startups, working with the strategic partners or strategic vendors as well. So that's another partnership lever to accelerate our own, the business outcomes. But then the other lever that I'm very, very proud of that NM has done is we have a Northwestern Mutual Data Science Institute. And it's one of the best examples of academic and industry partnership. And the reason I say this is because Northwestern Mutual is equally invested with Marquette University and University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, together, and they have brought together what we call Northwestern Mutual Data Science Institute. So Chancellor of University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, President of Marquette, and myself, we sit at the exec committee of this NMDSI entity, and then we also have an exec director that runs the program. Our exec leaders are heavily vested in wanting to make this successful, and this is our seventh year now. We just renewed it last year, so this is our seventh year now. And the focus on this is three parts. One is building the talent within the community. So we invest significantly in trying to build the talent within the community. Also focused on creating new curriculum and programs, because when you think about the AI, that world has changed. So how do you work with the university partners and focus on creating curriculum for the students that is more future ready? And then we provide internship opportunities. And those interns are not just available to us, but they're available to other local big companies and small companies as well. So that's the second piece. The third piece is the scholarship, the research programs. So we run research programs with the universities and we provide opportunities for them to write papers as well. So that particular opportunity is quite intriguing to me because I've always grown up in a fairly strong R&D environment. So it has left a lot of impact on the community itself. We host ethics symposiums. We host large AI symposium. We just hosted one couple months ago where the entire community comes together. We work very closely with other community coalition forums as well on how we can bring, you know, similar set of intellectuals together to be able to discuss what they're doing. So again, I am extremely proud of NMDSI and NM's investment in raising the bar for the community. Ethics is something huge. So we are wanting to establish that as a national center. Lofty goals, very lofty goals, but we are charging towards that for sure.
Well, that's very, very impressive. Anju, I mean, think about all the things that you just talked about. Opportunities for education, opportunities for reskilling, opportunities for internship, opportunities for community building. So for people who are listening, and one of the, as I've told you before, purposes of this podcast is to really bring stories like yours and NM's Northwestern Mutuals so that people understand the real work in AI is being done by companies like Northwestern Mutual, which I don't think is coming across in every conversation at dinner. As you said, it's gone from boardroom to dinner table. I don't know if every dinner table is talking about this. They're talking about ChatGPT. But my point is, you have exciting things happening, but there is an unbelievable opportunity to, you know, grow, to get new skills, to continue in an innovative, experimental incubation, all kinds of environment that exists. So for our listeners who are now excited after listening to you and saying, hey, man, maybe I do want to come and work for NM, what are you looking for when you're looking to hire for your team? A few, three, four traits that I think jump at you.
Yeah. So before I talk about the traits, one thing I'll say is definitely, if listening to it and wanting to learn more about the Northwestern Mutual Data Science Institute, follow Northwestern Mutual. We have and follow Northwestern Mutual Data Science Institute as well. Both of us are in both Northwestern Mutual and Northwestern Mutual Data Science Institute is on LinkedIn. You can go to our webpage as well, northwesternmutual.com, and you can find NMDSI from there. We host every month, it's open to anybody. We have a lot of people globally joining our speaker series. So we host a speaker series on AI normally on a monthly basis. Our symposium are open to people as well. It's free ticket, so you can join. Mm-hmm. There's one that we are hosting. And I believe October, it's an ethics symposium. And we have a fairly robust, it's not public yet, but fairly robust keynote speaker coming in. So definitely look for that and join it. So I'll switch gears to talk a little bit about talent. Talent is key to any company, right? You win by talent. And I say this, you win by talent. The only reason you can be successful is if you ever got good, you've got a strong talent. So a couple things. One is technical expertise, especially if you're wanting to be part of my team. Technical expertise is critical. A desire to learn and grow. That's a must. And it's just, you have to have that, right? The curiosity, the desire to learn and grow. And the third thing I would say is, you know, how do you collaborate with people? You'll see this, you know, when I graduated, right? Collaboration was not that key per se, because if you're a data science, you're working within the data science segment. If you're a chemical, if you have done something in chemistry, you're working within the chemistry space. If you've done something in biology, you're doing within the biology space. This is a number of years ago. The world has changed now. And what has happened, it's convergence of sciences that has taken precedence over a siloed science. So that's why being collaborative into the new space is a critical skill set to have. Because there are things that if you know chemistry really well, that's not going to cut it unless you are wanting to deliver outcome that has biological ingredients playing a role in it. So the more you understand how, you know, all these components fit together, and again, convergence of sciences, which, you know, to my surprise, a lot of universities now, if you look at their curriculum, they are providing courses in, you know, in these convergence of sciences, which doesn't, you don't see that naturally, but if you look at the courses, there are mathematical methods with economics, there's political science with math, there's biology with chemistry. So some of those were there before, but a lot more of those are coming out now. So definitely take those courses, explore those. If you're wanting to be in AI space, explore those and see how you can not just excel yourself into the technical aspects of it, but how you excel in a team format, right? When academia trains us, that trains us really well as individual contributors. When you get into the industry, right? And I can tell you from my own experience, when you get into the industry, the first thing you learn is how do you work in a team? And how do you go after a collective success versus success of your own? So the three things, you know, it's technical expertise for sure, but desire to learn and being able to work collaboratively in a team is what I would say are my top priorities when I look for a talent.
And having some multidisciplinary skills is what you also mentioned. You know, absolutely. Have political science and then economics or something like that, because the world is so dynamic. So I think to our listeners who are looking at Northwestern Mutual, I think Anju has given you the recipe for what she's looking for. Hopefully, you heard some of the amazing things that she's doing. Anju, towards the end, and I could go on for at least two more hours because I have so many other questions, but we'll need to get you back here. But towards the end, you actually have other things to do. We do a lightning round of questions, one word answer. So are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So Anju, GPUs or TPUs?
Good one. GPUs for now.
Okay. Python or R?
Python.
Okay. TensorFlow.
I am trained as an R person.
I know. TensorFlow or PyTorch?
Good one. PyTorch now.
Okay. Cloud or on-prem?
Cloud.
Okay. Let's see. Open source or closed source?
Well, that's a tough one. Depending on the use case.
we'll give you that. Absolutely. Deep learning or reinforcement learning?
Oh, do I have to pick one?
You could pick, and we'll make an exception.
It's
You've
sequential.
Been such a great... You can pick both, yeah.
So you go with deep learning and then you do reinforcement learning to get your outcome.
Awesome. Anju, for our listeners who either are setting up an AI shop in their companies, you know, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies or newly appointed chief AI officers, some final words of advice for them from such a seasoned veteran like you.
Well, thank you. So make sure you have buy-in. That is extremely critical. Make sure you have buy-in. Invest. You can't do it without investment, Right. And the last thing that I think is extremely critical for all of us, especially for the AI leaders, learn as much as you can. This space is changing. And if you are the leader within that space, then you need to learn so that you can define what it can become for your company and how you bring others along. So again, lead by example. So learning is going to be extremely critical.
Invest, learn, bring others along. Those are some parting, very, very important words that you had to say. And thank you, Anju, for sharing your incredible journey and insights with us today. Your experiences across different industries and your approach to driving AI initiatives is truly inspiring. And thank you for taking the time to join us today. Really, I really enjoyed this. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the CIO podcast. Stay tuned for more episodes where we continue to explore the fascinating world of AI through the eyes of its leaders like Anju. Until next time, it is Sanjay Puri signing off. Thank you, Anju. This was fabulous. I really enjoyed it. Wish I had at least 1 hour more. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Sanjay. I enjoyed it.